Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Passus, an internet radio program conducted by Dr. Damian Goldberg from Los Angeles, California. Damian invites you once a week to share this space to reflect on your work life. How can we achieve results, satisfaction, and well-being at work? How can we find balance between our work and personal life? Prepare for challenging dialogue with Dr. Damian Goldberg and his guests, who are thought leaders from all over the world.
Hi, this is Dr. Damian Goldberg. Today is Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. Today from Los Angeles, California. For people who are listening to us for first time, Pasos, or Steps in Spanish, we have here in our program, our goal is to bring well-being to our organization, so steps or pasos to get better workplaces where people get not only results, but also satisfaction and well-being. And every week we have a guest speaker from all over the world. Today we have a very special person, Carol Corsi, MCC. Carol, I met Carol many years ago when I went through my coaching training in Newfield Network. We're talking around 2000. And she was at that time the director, she was the vice president and the director of coaching training for Newfield Network. And since then, we have had a colleague relationship. Carol is somebody that I appreciate, that I admire, and I feel very grateful for everything that I learned from her during my training. And today, she's here with us to share her new book, Save Your Inner Tortoise, Learn How to Cross the Finish Line Joyful and Satisfied. So today she will be talking about emotional agility, the difference between emotional intelligence and how to develop it. So I'm very, very happy to have with us today a master certified coach, an executive coach and author, somebody who is working now with groups that are interested in developing emotional agility. So I want to welcome Carol. Carol, welcome to Pasos.
Thank you very much, Damian. It's very fun to play with you again.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So to start the call today, Carol, why don't you share with us what make you write this book? What interests you, what motivates you to talk about emotional agility?
Well, what motivated me personally was probably almost 20 years ago now when I was hired by my dream company. I had recently discovered that I was a resentful person, and I actually discovered that during my coach training. And being known and predisposed to being resentful was news to me. And when I had a group of colleagues that I respected who not only knew it about me, but they hired me anyway, I was actually quite embarrassed and really questioned how could I be so blind. And I was in my 40s at the time and had a very successful career and had been an executive at another company. And yet the people, when I started talking to people about this discovery of mine of being kind of a resentful, entitled, I want to be better than you kind of person, almost to a person, they were like, of course that's what we know about you. And I did not want that to be my identity. And so my personal motivation about learning emotions came about the same time that in my coursework I was reading some of the early books by Martin Seligman, Learned Optimism, and Daniel Goleman was just starting to talk about this idea of emotional intelligence. So it was in the early days of this idea of emotions as territories of learning. And so I had this great discovery and had absolutely no clue on how to leave resentment. I knew it in my head. I knew I needed to. I knew I should. I knew it would be good for my career. I knew I'd be happier. All that knowing didn't change my predisposition, my tendency, my automatic reaction, wanting to find out who was to blame for problems. Because that's the fundamental purpose of resentment, is finding someone to blame for something that's going wrong. And I was very skillful at that, and problem solving situations. However, sometimes I was like a dog with a bone, and I couldn't get off the, if we don't find out who's to blame first, we can't move forward. And that was what happened to me my first day on my dream job. Big problem to solve by 9 o'clock the next morning. And I couldn't give up, well, whose fault is this? And all the owner of the company, the rest of the executive team all looked at me and said, well, we don't have time to figure that out. Let's solve the problem. And if we have time later to find out who's at fault or are even interested who's at fault, we'll do that. But let's move on and solve the problem. And I thought those people were Martians. It's like, no, you have to find out. Yeah, no, exactly. It's like, wait, no.
Yeah, coming in from that place. And Carol, I think that what you said before, that I think it's important, is many times we find ourselves with emotions and we have done therapy or look into our work, personal growth, and still we have these emotions. And we have the knowledge, we have the information, but that is not enough. What you're saying, so how do we do that? How do we go from knowing to applying that knowledge that we have?
Yeah. And honestly, Damien, that's why I eventually wrote the book, because I had to create my own 4 steps to doing it for myself. So I did it for myself first, and then I discovered that there were a lot of my clients, you know, the title of my book, Savior and a Tortoise, I wrote it for a very particular audience that I was a part of. And those were the overwhelmed from caring too much and doing too much and saying yes when you meant no, and the uninspired, the frustrated, the disappointed, the regretful, the sad, the resentful like me, the resigned because they were disappointed in life. That's the audience, because what I found about us, and I'm including myself in the group, is that we care a great deal. That's why we tend to overdo and not practice self-care. And yet when we had gone too far, like I had done, and, you know, I was working 60 hours a week, had 2 jobs, worked weekends, worked every vacation, felt tethered to work, felt guilty when I was at home because I was distracted with work. At work, I felt guilty if I was thinking about home. So that's the audience that I wrote my book for, because we needed step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4. Simple, because going from resentment, legitimate resentment, it wasn't that there weren't betrayals and broken promises in my career. There were plenty of those. But there were also very good circumstances that I also brought my resentment to. And I had honestly no clue on how to stop being so resentful. And so I eventually published the book so that I could help other people who were stuck in some emotional spinning wheel, if you will, ways of getting out and, as I would call it now, inaugurate or practice a little bit of emotional agility by jumping to a different emotion. So that's the long answer to my why.
That's very interesting, because I'm sure that many people who are listening can identify finding ourselves stuck, as you're saying, in with our emotions. So what is emotional agility? How we define emotional agility?
Let's see. I think the quote that I read very early in my studies about changing emotions was a quote from Aristotle, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't remember it exactly, but he said something very close to this. Anyone can be angry easy, but to be angry with the right person at the right time, to the right degree, and for the right purpose, that's not easy. And that really nailed my experience of being resentful. It's like I kept going over the top with my resentment, or spreading it where it didn't belong, or I was in that first meeting, I was unable to give up wanting to find out who was at fault, and I couldn't move on until then. So I think emotional agility is being able to shift into a different way of being, a different emotion, so that it produces the results that you want. If you're not getting the results that you want in life, my claim is that there's some emotion that if you shifted there, would produce very different results for you and for other people around you.
And how does this process work? How do you shift that way of being?
Yeah. Well, first of all, step one, to accept and be aware that we are emotional human beings. When I first started talking about emotional learning in organizations, because I was a consultant at the time, and I found that if I could get a team or an executive to lead in a different emotion, like someone going from being a dictator to a collaborative leader, or a team working more collaboratively together rather than blaming each other for mistakes, etc. What I discovered is if I could shift their emotion, the problems they were encountering were solved much faster than if I did not. And so, I remember employer after employer, client after client telling me, don't bring that emotional stuff. At that time, and this is, 20-some years ago, it's like, leave your emotions at home. And what they fail to recognize is that a successful leader has the right emotion for people to follow them. In other words, a leader who can get people to trust them even when they're going through difficult circumstances. People will follow someone they trust. They will not believe someone they distrust. Trust and distrust are both assessments, but they're also emotional states. So how do you generate the emotion of trust? So the first point is that you have to be aware that emotions are in the driver's seat. We do nothing as a human being without an emotion. And I think we confuse being overly emotional with being emotional. So instead of being too angry, it's like I want the passion for anger and correcting something or righting a wrong. You need resentment and anger to right wrongs. You just don't need too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
You need enough to ignite the passion of people to follow you and do what's necessary and be determined to solve the problem. You don't need to belittle people or, go too far with your anger.
Yeah. I really think that what you said is very important about this idea of leaving your emotions at home. When people are saying, okay, don't bring your problems, don't bring your things from home to work. And we are whole human beings. And yes. Emotions are an important part of who we are. So I think that the distinction that you made from emotion from overly emotional, I think it's very yeah. important to have that
yeah.
clarity,
yeah.
particularly in the workplace. If we want to have well-being at work.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I think that that's important to recognize that to create well-being at work and to create healthy workplaces, we're bringing our whole to work. So we're not bringing only our minds or our hands. We're bringing who we are. We're bringing our emotions. And I think that
yeah.
I want to reemphasize what you said before about the importance of distinguishing that we are human beings with emotion, that we bring them to work, and the right amount of emotion allow us to be able to be effective and to create healthy organizations. And not to misunderstand bringing our emotions with being emotional as overly emotional and displaying emotions in an inappropriate way.
Yeah, I remember teaching a team a combination of optimism and pessimism. And what I did is I assigned those members of the team who tended to be optimistic, like, I can do anything, we can do anything, let's go, full of ambition and energy, et cetera. And I would assign them the job of being the pessimistic part of the group. And I would do the opposite with the pessimists. I would say, okay, your job is to find a possibility, find something optimistic, find something that is possible. And I did that intentionally because I wanted to show the optimistic people how beneficial pessimism is to an organization making changes. You want pessimistic members someplace because a pessimist can find what's going to go wrong, anticipate what's going to go wrong much faster than an optimist. An optimist doesn't want to play there. It's like, no, I don't want all that negative stuff. Let's just do the positive stuff. And very often, if you're too positive, you're going to miss the very thing that sabotages the project. So having them switch roles, have them be able to see and feel the advantages of pessimism or optimism. And at the end of the project, they had added another emotion to what I call in my book, your emotional wardrobe. It's like, if you look in your emotional closet and there's only three emotions in there, life and possibilities is going to be pretty limited for you. But if you have a really lovely variety of emotions that you can tap into when necessary, like when you want to be sad. One of my clients just lost her husband in unexpectedly, and she's been resisting sadness, and she understands that sadness is a part of how she will admire her husband. It's wonderful that she's sad because it demonstrates how much she loved him and how much she's missing him. Does she have to bring the sadness to work? Absolutely not. Because now she has time for grieving and sadness, and with emotional agility, she can genuinely leave it to make a big presentation or get a project moving forward. And she can go back to the sadness to honor her loss. So she has both of those wardrobe emotions in her wardrobe now. So that's kind of step two of emotional agility. It's understanding that you can interrupt an emotion and you can go back to it. And for some reason, that interrupting did the same thing for me. It's like, I don't have to be as afraid of my resentment, which I wanted to leave totally when I discovered it because I was so embarrassed. But then I discovered resentment allows me to stand for myself, to set boundaries. I can become angry when someone breaks a promise, ask them for compensation, and ask them for their new promise. If I totally avoided resentment, I probably wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
because I wouldn't have that sort of passion. So interrupting ourselves, knowing that we can go back and forth and back and forth. And then the third is you can't talk yourself into an emotion like, I want to be happier, or I want to be, like at this particular meeting, I never stand up for myself. I want to be more, have more dignity and more autonomy, and I want to have more independence. If you have not practiced dignity, autonomy, and independence before that meeting, and it's not in your emotional wardrobe, it's not going to happen. So practicing before you need it, kind of like Aikido,
mm-hmm.
is that you practice a skill before you need it. Then when you do need it, when you do need boundary setting, which is saying no when you mean no and yes when you mean yes, that mm-hmm. takes practice, especially if you were a pleaser like me.
Mm-hmm. And how do you practice? What suggestion do you have in terms of practices that can help you to?
Well, first I would recommend that you pick an emotion, like you actually name the emotion that you want. So what I picked with my resentment is I just wanted to be happier, more playful, have more fun. So I decided I wanted to be lighthearted. And so every day I made sure that I was playful, lighthearted, laughed at a joke, made somebody else laugh at a joke. Part of my job as the director of coach training was the annual budgets, which I hated. I mean, like legitimate hate here. I'm dyslexic with numbers. However, guess what? It still was my job. So I would shut my office door, I would turn my stereo on, shuffle, and I would have 5 different CDs, opera, country western music, Enya, rock and roll. And on shuffle, I would never know what song was coming up next. And whatever song came up next, I would try to embody the energy of that song while I was doing my budget. So I did We Will Rock You by Queen, which was a favorite song of mine, as you can know from our Newfield studies. And I would be very determined, very disciplined, very consistent, very careful. And then Enya would come on, and la-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I would do my budget in that emotion. And here's what was very interesting. Something that would take me 8 or 9 hours, like the year before, 2 hours and my budget was done.
Well, that's remarkable.
And
it's interesting what you're talking about.
I'm on to something here.
How music can really help us to create emotional states. Sometimes it's amazing how if we are feeling for some reason a bit sad, sometimes it's okay to stay in that place. But sometimes when you say, okay, it's enough, now it's time to change the mood, and music can really make a big difference.
Yep. Yep. And that would be a tip I would leave your listeners with, is if they want a different experience of well-being, what's the music they would pick for well-being? What lifts them up? Who are the musicians or the songs that actually lift them up in a way or somehow make them happy? You know, like Pharrell Williams' Happy Song. It's like I can put that thing on, and no matter how grumpy I am, in a matter of minutes, I can be happier if I tell myself I'm open to the possibility of being happier.
Yeah. It's interesting
and
that
sometimes
in my last,
music works just by itself.
That makes such a big difference. I was thinking that in my last coaching class, I kept putting the music of Happy, you know, that last song that it has so much energy from the movie.
Yes.
And wow, that makes so much different climate in the program. So having that high energy, nice music. So I think that bringing, kind of what is also making me think is how we can choose the music that we want to create these emotional states, not only when we have to do a task, like it's a challenging one, like the budget, but how we can choose the music that we want to listen all day. How we assure that the music that we are getting, the music that is supporting different emotions that we may want to have at different times, because as you said, it's not also about being all the time up and high, and it's about being able to experience and live with this variety of emotions. And
And another tip that I would offer you is emotions are contagious. If you've ever seen a crowd, like at a sports event, you can see a team improve or fall apart depending on what emotions were in the crowd.
Yeah.
And so they have all sorts of scientific studies about how contagious emotions are. So who are you spending your time around? Like when I was resentful, I was always I had lunch every single day with the group that complained about management every day for 4 years. I had lunch with this group. When I discovered lightness was my aim, I couldn't have lunch with that group anymore.
That's a great
because
example.
They generated the opposite emotion that I was playing. So I had to find lighter-hearted people to spend time with and take the complaints because they turned their nastiness on me because I was no longer a part of the group.
Mm, yep. Well, that's a risk.
So I had to be resilient. I had to think that, no, being lighter is more important to me than being liked by a group of grumpy people.
So, before we start wrapping up the program today, how do you differentiate emotional agility from emotional intelligence?
Simply said, I think to be emotionally intelligent, which is how I define it, is being able to generate well-being on a consistent basis. It's not that you don't go in and out of resentment and resignation and disappointment, but it's that I think emotional intelligence is a general life of well-being, that you don't spend a whole lot of time in the dumper. You might spend a few hours or a week, but you don't spend months or years. So that's how I would define. I connect emotional intelligence with an overall life of well-being. Emotional agility is the practice that you need in those areas where you're not so agile. Like, I wasn't very practiced at lightness. I was, if you want to know how to be resentful, come to me. I can teach you. But I needed some help in balancing my scales, my emotional scales of being lightness. And now I'm pretty much predisposed to being lighter. It's not that I don't go to resentment, but I don't stay there very long. And I have a real preference now for fun and lightheartedness. And I think being agile is just being able to get out of the dumper when I want. And if I am sad, like my client, to be able to be there and understand the beauties of sadness, not just the consequence of sadness. So I connect emotional intelligence directly with well-being, a sense of well-being. And if you're not quite there, emotional agility will help you add more of the emotions that you need.
Thank you for clarifying that question. And before we finish, Carol, is anything else that you would like to share with the people who are going to be quite listening to our program or who are going to be downloading the program?
Yeah, if they have an interest in this idea of emotional agility, every month I do a free teleclass. So my website is saveyourinnertortoise.com. And if you go to events on there, you'll see the next teleclass. Like this morning, I did one on cultivating genuine pride and self-respect. And so every month, and you can sign up, and if you're not available, like your radio show, you give them recordings, I do the same thing. It's like if they can't attend live, you register, and then I send the recording when the recording's available. And I'm always interested in questions that people have, so my email is carol@saveyourinnertortoise.com. And questions or insights, I love getting... my book is full of tricks that I got from my clients who played with me all those years and were quite generous with their ideas, etc. So there are lots of tips and tricks and techniques in bringing emotional learning. It's like we don't need therapy to be emotionally intelligent. All we might need is just some practice.
So that was really great. I am personally interested, and I hope that I can participate in the future of your daily classes. I would love to do that. And we are going to post your website information and the information about your book here in our website, and you can access to this program by downloading it, and you may want it to share with other people. So I want to invite you to do that.
Carol, I will do that. Thank you.
Carol, I want to thank you one more time for being with us. It was great having this opportunity to have this conversation and play together. And for people who are listening to us, thank you for your time. I think that this has been a really interesting and insightful and helpful session, and I hope people can benefit from learning and definitely from getting your book. I think it makes a big difference. It doesn't matter if people are coaches or working organizations. I think that this information is useful and important for everybody who wants to create well-being in their lives. So thank you and have a good night. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks, Damien. Bye.
This is the end of PASOS, conducted by Dr. Damien Goldberg. Thanks for sharing this program with us today. We hope you find today's conversation challenging and stimulating. You can download this program and share with your colleagues in our website.